My third significant relationship. The intention behind keeping my apartment in Johannesburg was to commute between Knysna and Johannesburg for the last 6 months of my 2-year contract with CCH. Now it became my permanent home for a while. I had managed to live in my extremely expensive dream home for only a few weeks. I would hate to work out the equivalent daily rate that this exercise had cost me. It was now January 2000 and I was back at work. It was a difficult time because everyone at CCH wanted to know how I was enjoying Knysna and my new baby. How could I explain my situation? In some cases, I did not say or explain anything, but there were a few people that had to be told, and so I faced up to this responsibility. I was known and regarded as a very grounded person, calm, stable, reliable, and yet I left my wife, my newborn child, and my new home all in the space of a few weeks. I'm sure that most people probably thought that I was experiencing a midlife crisis, and who could blame them? Maybe I was. The only upside to all this was the fact that Zelda and I could see each other without the guilt and the clandestine maneuvers that we had become accustomed to. This was the acid test for us, as it is easy to be caught up in the excitement of a new illicit romance, but you only really get to know each other properly when you are able to spend quality time together. Now we had the time and the freedom to do this. Towards the end of January 2000, I went down to Knysna for a weekend, as it was Stephen's 7th birthday. It was a very uncomfortable experience, very, as Stephen was now in grade 1 at his new school, and being the small town that Knysna is, I had probably made the front page of one of their weekly tabloids. You can almost visualize the headline. Husband builds a new mansion, has a baby, and deserts a few weeks later. Come, meet him at his kid's birthday party. Now I had to socialize with the local community at Stephen's party. Oh, fun. But it was my choice, and I had to face my responsibilities, and I did. In the meantime, I had decided to start the divorce process. I'd been told that an attorney based in Pretoria was really good. He'd handled many divorces for celebrities, including Annaline Creel Kersner Tucker, soon to be Annaline Creel Kersner Tucker Bacon. He had represented her against Mr. Tucker. Anyway, despite her long signature, a certain Mr. Shapiro had done a great job in helping her during this process. I met with him, and he was the most solemn, dour person I'd ever met, but he was sharp and methodical. I'm really pleased that he did not charge for his smile, because I don't think I could have afforded that rare indulgence. We prepared the papers, and I told him to hold back on having them served on her until after the following weekend, as I was going down to Knysna to see Stephen and Jamie. As it turned out, when I arrived in Knysna on the Friday evening, Annie asked to speak to me privately. She asked if I was prepared to reconsider our situation and get back together. My response was a simple and quick no. She left me and I spent some time with Stephen. No more than 20 minutes after our conversation, the sheriff of the court arrived at the house and promptly served me with a divorce summons in front of Stephen. I was extremely angry. I felt she could have at least warned me, and we could have made sure that Stephen did not have to witness this. But that was Annie. There were many incidents far worse than this still to follow. And so the litigation process began. It turned out to be a very messy and extremely expensive process. In the end, only a few months later, I was divorced and Annie was a wealthy woman, courtesy of my generosity. I felt that, as it had been my choice to get divorced, I had to be fair and reasonable. But Mr. Shapiro simply could not believe or understand my generosity. I was now divorced for the second time, on May the 2nd, 2000. Now that my divorce was behind me, I could focus on my new relationship. I just bought and moved into a new house. My contract with CCH was almost completed, so I was looking forward to a new business challenge. Shortly after I had moved in, Zelda sold her apartment and moved in with me. Her family was not happy about this. She came from a traditional Afrikaans family, and the fact that she had an affair with a married man who had now left his family and newborn child was difficult for them to handle. Her sister was especially anti-me for this, but I believe that this was largely driven by the fact that her husband had been killed in a car accident a year or two before, and she was widowed with two very young boys. In her eyes, my ex-wife was in a similar position, but she was alone because it was my choice to leave her. This made me a bad person. I finally got to meet her parents, sister, and two brothers. It was difficult at first, but her mother made an effort to get to know me and help ease me into the family. I really liked the family. They were good, genuine people, and it wasn't long before they took to me and I became a natural part of the family. On the home front, things weren't so easy. It was a bit of a roller coaster. One day things were absolutely fantastic, and the next day they were a nightmare. In a day we could experience both extremes. I had come to learn that Zelda was a very insecure person beneath her confident exterior. The big disconnect for us was that I am not a person to constantly dish out compliments, while she needed them in huge daily doses. She was an attractive, intelligent, capable, successful woman, but she needed to be told that all the time. She was vain and constantly sought a mirror for reassurance of her beauty. I could not understand this, as I'm a total opposite. I hate to be told that I'm doing a great job or how good I am. I try to improve my ability to randomly spew out compliments, but struggled with it, as I felt I was just saying things that were shallow and lacked meaning, for the sake of it. But that was my mistake, as they didn't lack meaning to her. She was also an extremely jealous person, and her jealousy cultivated mine. We fed off each other's jealousy. I recall that at various times in my life I had experienced jealousy with my previous spouses, but somehow I always convinced myself that to have a little bit of jealous streak in you was a good thing, as it showed that you loved your partner. I always believed that my jealousy was under control and well managed. With the benefit of hindsight, I know that this was not the case. All I had managed to do was convince myself that it was. We began to mirror each other's insecurities and jealousy. The learned head doctors will tell us that jealousy is merely a form of insecurity, and it is. In my instance, I guess that my insecurity in our relationship at the time was driven by my average looks and my above-average bald head. I felt unattractive, and yet I had this attractive partner who had a good figure, intellect, and an infectious personality. Zelda was very insecure in our relationship, as she had suddenly realized that if I could leave my wife for her, what would prevent me from leaving her for another woman? For such an intelligent woman, I would have thought she would have thought about this in August 1999, but no. Now was a good time for this to come to the fore. Isn't this just the classic scenario where the mistress is more secure in the role of the mistress than in being a partner to the man who leaves his spouse for her? We had many discussions, arguments, and debates about my commitment. My view was that I had left my family, my home, and a small fortune to my ex-wife in order to be with her. We now live together. What more could I ask for? Her view was that I could do it all again, to her. This caused me great frustration, as it made me question whether everything I had been through to be with her was really worth it. Perhaps it was preferable to be chased around the house by an angry woman with a fire poker. It got so extreme that I was expected to spend every single minute with Zelda. If I spent time talking to my kids on the phone, it would upset her, as I should rather be spending time with her. She couldn't stand my relationship with my business partner, Mike. She used to like him, but for some reason she saw him as a threat. He would phone me often, and she got really angry, especially if the conversation took more than 2 minutes. I guess he was using up her time with me. She expected to be spoilt with attention and material gifts all the time. If I bought my children clothes or anything else, she expected me to spend at least the same amount of money on her. She measured my love, by what expensive gifts I bought her, and I tried to prove my love by doing just this. It became a very expensive game. What I noticed was that she rarely bought me anything in return. This was a give-and-take relationship. I was giving and she was taking. Lessons learned? 64. You never really know someone until you spend lots of quality time with them. Simple little things that might irritate each other only come out later. You need to identify these and learn to deal with them. 65. You cannot buy someone's love, nor can expensive gifts cure someone's insecurities. 66. Sometimes the mistress is more comfortable in the role of being the mistress. When the mistress becomes the partner, she might assume that you will be unfaithful to her as well. Avoid having a mistress at all costs. Brett flew up just about every second weekend from George, and quite often Stephen flew up with him to spend the weekend with me. Zelda was great with Stephen, and he liked her. The two of them loved to gang up on me. It seemed that Stephen was accepting the fact that his parents were now divorced, but I felt that he hadn't really dealt with it. At first, Annie was okay with him flying up, but then things started to change. He used to fly up on the 14:20 flight from George on the Friday and return on the 15:30 flight on Sunday. This meant he was home in Knysna by 1800 hours. Then Annie told me she couldn't do this anymore as it made him too tired. That was utter nonsense, but she convinced the headmaster of Stephen's school to send me a letter stating this, and so Stephen stopped visiting. But she went further. She was difficult about allowing me to have him over school holidays, claiming she'd already made their holiday plans. There was no question in her mind about sending Jamie with Stephen. No, he was way too young as far as she was concerned, which was fine. But I assumed that once he turned 4, he would come. Wrong. Annie never wanted me to get too close to Jamie, despite what she said. Jamie is her baby, the baby that I didn't want, the baby that I left her with. To illustrate the point, consider this. Shortly after I had left her, she started a relationship with a chap by the name of Franklin, who was quite a bit older than her. She'd been involved in a relationship with him many years before, when she was at university. He was a nice person, so I was comfortable with my kids being in his space. Annie decided to teach Jamie to call Franklin Daddy, which on its own is okay, but worse than that, she taught him to call me Kevin. What mother in her right mind would do this? It was when he was about 3 that I finally lost it. In front of Annie, I told Jamie that I was his daddy and he should call me that and that he should not call me Kevin. I also told him that it was okay for him to call Franklin Daddy. Over time, he got it right, and now it's no longer an issue. In time, Franklin moved to New Zealand, so Jamie only has one daddy now. Lessons learned. 67. Never teach your children to call someone else mommy or daddy if that biological parent is still involved in your children's lives. With such a volatile relationship, Zelda and I became experts at starting new relationships with each other, of course. We would break up today and make up tomorrow. But the harder we tried, the worse it got. I could not understand her behavior and viewpoints, and there was no logic or pattern to them. This baffled my analytical brain. By logical deduction, I came to the conclusion that I must be the cause of the problems, as I had a track record of 2 failed marriages and was in a very troubled relationship that was, well, all over the place. I was determined not to screw it up for the 3rd time. For some reason, probably to determine my sanity or lack thereof, I purchased a dictaphone. I started recording the incidents in great detail. I tried to be objective about what had caused the incident, what had been said, what I shouldn't have said, or whether I believed I could have handled it better, and so on. After most of our fights, Zelda would phone me and leave abusive and often drunken messages on my voicemail. Bad Move, as I played them on my car phone and recorded them on the dictaphone. After a few tapes had been recorded, I decided to listen to them. It was like listening to your personal daily journal, except the content was mostly disturbing. It proved to me that we were both crazy. She was crazy because of her behavior and her issues, and I was crazy because I was still around being subjected to it all. I was relieved by the former and disturbed by the latter. I couldn't understand why we could break up so often. Sometimes it was her decision and other times mine, but we always took each other back. I really loved her and was desperate to try and make the relationship work, but I was running out of ideas on how to achieve this. But now, a new issue was looming. Brett was still at boarding school in George and had decided he wanted to move back to Johannesburg to live with me. This was not an option as far as Zelda was concerned. In fact, she told me I had to make a choice, either Brett or her. I was really shocked by this. To me, it was not even a choice, and I told her so in the nicest possible way. But as far as she was concerned, this just proved to her that I didn't love her enough. Brett was coming back to Johannesburg for good at the end of the year. Lessons learned? 68. Never put someone in a position that requires them to make a choice between their children and your relationship. If you feel the need to do this, then move on and find someone else who will provide you with a relationship in which you do not feel threatened. I decided that we should consider seeing a counselor or psychologist to help us work things out. Up until then, I had never paid much heed to psychologists. I felt I had the same ability to analyze issues and situations and arrive at the same conclusions as they did. My approach just cost less and without the stigma of having just seen a shrink. Going to an outsider for help was a big step for me, but I tried it, and in a way it was a good thing because we saw a female psychologist who helped me realize that I was not the major cause of the constant upheaval. I guess the tapes I left with her helped my cause a great deal, but there was a lot more at stake than trying to cover my backside. Despite the counseling and the medication that Zelda received, there was not much improvement in our day-to-day lives. She had by now moved out, and we were still making up every second day. Perhaps they are right. Make-up sex is always great. Zelda felt that I was not committed to her and therefore would never marry her. This was never the case. I had fought long and hard in trying to make things work. I wanted a loving, stable relationship more than anything. Eventually, I thought that perhaps if we got engaged, she would accept that I was totally committed to her, which would be the solution to her insecurity. I did not discuss this with her. I just decided to buy a ring and surprise her on her birthday, which was on the 24th of January. By this time, we would have been together for 3 years, although it seemed like 10. I bought a beautiful diamond and, with the help of the jeweler, designed a unique, beautiful ring. On her birthday, I took her to her favorite restaurant, and during the meal I proposed to her. The ring was an expensive one with a large diamond, so she was ecstatic. I was hopeful that this would surely be the solution. Not quite. Within a few days, I realized that it had not changed a thing. If I was confused before, then I was bewildered now. All this proved that the real issue was not my commitment to her, it was something else. But exactly what, I didn't know. Lessons learned? 69. Sometimes what you perceive to be the real issue is simply a front for a deeper, more significant issue. Try to determine this up front by asking closed questions, e.g., if I or we do this, will it solve our problem? If you do not get a categorical yes as a response, then probe further using the same technique until you understand as many of the real issues as possible. The on-off-on-again relationship continued until towards the end of the year, October 2002 to be precise. It was then that I finally knew I couldn't continue like this. I was emotionally drained, my blood pressure and cholesterol levels were high for the first time in my life. I was stressed. In my heart, I knew it was over, just like I had known with Jenny and Annie. But now it was three strikes in a row. Surely I was the common denominator. I may not have made enough effort with Jenny. I may have tried to a degree with Annie, but I definitely gave it my best with Zelda, and yet after a little more than 3 years, this relationship was also over. This failure to find lasting love did not make sense to me, as I knew I was a good person. I have the greatest integrity and moral standing. The only blemish, as far as I was concerned, was being unfaithful on 3 occasions, so perhaps this was my punishment for those transgressions. I was never unfaithful when I was with Zelda, but nonetheless, I decided I would never be unfaithful again.